Hey guys, Barry here. Just before you listen to this week's episode of Worst Foot Forward with Alexander Fox talking about the world's worst drummer, we want to say a big thank you to new Patreon donor to the show, Alison Shipley, who has chucked us $3 a month. And so she will be getting some of the extra super secret bonus content that our Patreon donors get each month. So if you want to be a legend like Alison, go visit patreon.com. Look for Worst Foot Forward and join our crew there. Also, shout out to those of you who have been to see Ben in the Edinburgh Festival. If you haven't been yet or you're going up to Edinburgh for the last couple of weeks, do go see his show Fable Maker and say hi, because he's been enjoying getting to meet some of our pod family members. And also, looking ahead, my play Vespertilio, which you might remember me banging on about in February, is coming back in September to the Dublin Fringe Festival. If you look up Dublin Fringe Vespertilio, you can find all the details there, running from the 17th to the 22nd. Again, if any of our Irish listeners want to come to the show, or any of our international listeners want to come, I will be there every night, so do say hello. As ever, you can find out more about our podcast if you visit our website, worstfootforwardpodcast.com. You can look us up on Twitter. We're on @worstfoot. I'm on @BazMaxDay, and Ben is on @BenVandeveld. And you can find us on Facebook as well. And you can subscribe to us if you haven't already done. If you've just listened to this episode on the off chance, we're on pretty much every podcast app you can imagine. So just look up Worst Foot Forward, click subscribe. Drop us a cheeky little 5 stars in a review. That's always nice. And particular thanks to our raft of international listeners. We've been popping up in charts all over the place, in Britain and America, but also in Canada, in Luxembourg, Switzerland, Uruguay. So hello to any people who've been listening to us in all of those far-flung places. Do drop us a line on social media. We'd love to hear from you. Other than that, I hope you enjoy this week's episode. This episode was recorded on the hottest day in the history of the United Kingdom, pretty much. So we apologise in advance for just how mad we might go during it. Enjoy.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Worst Foot Forward, the podcast that each week celebrates the best of the worst. I'm Ben Vandeveld, and this week I'm delighted to tell you that we'll be entering the world of paradiddles, tom-toms, hi-hats, and other words that sound like World War II racial slurs. But are actually all part of the humble drum kit. To really get inside the psyche of a drummer, I've spent the morning repeatedly hitting anything that's not nailed down, repeatedly fucking anything that's not nailed down, and I've taken 3 hours to get the setup on this microphone just right while insisting that everyone in this postcode stand still, is quiet, and lets me get my instrument correct. I then concluded by downing a bottle of Jack Daniels and mooning all of my friends called Keith. And with me is a man brimful of John Bonamy and a rich buddy to my buddy Rich. It's Barry McStay.
Oh my god, can you just do that, like, that intro again for the whole podcast? That'd be just great. On a loop.
That'd be great.
Well, that would be the most drummer thing to do as well,
Just a Ben solo for the show for the entire hour.
No, you can't solo something that's metronomic. The whole point of the solo is that it's going to be really self-indulgent, and that wasn't self-indulgent enough.
No, it was not.
No, it was not.
I don't know. I feel like I've witnessed history. I don't know if anyone's done a John Bonham pun ever, but it's nice to be present for the very first one.
Thanks.
50 years after the moon landing.
We'll all remember where we were when Ben did the John Bonamy pun.
Oh, well, there's it. We all remember where we were when Keith Moon landed
on John Bonham.
Yeah.
And Jesus Christ, it's fucking hot.
Yeah, let's get right to this. Obviously, if you're a listener in, well, screw it, like pretty
on
much
planet Earth.
On planet Earth right now, my God, it's hot, and we're all going to die very soon because of the neglect of our governments.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I genuinely, on the way here, was like, I wonder if Ben will let us record in his kitchen with his fridge open.
It's, I mean, it's tempting. We could.
Your kitchen's a galley kitchen, it wouldn't work. The acoustics would be wrong.
Just to put in perspective, if you're not a British listener, we are recording on what is purported to be the hottest day in the history of the United Kingdom since the dinosaurs were hanging around here. Obviously, if you were in Australia, it's what's known as a Wednesday, but it is going to hit 39 degrees today, and neither me nor Barry are good at dealing with heat.
Yeah, I feel like by the end of this, like, you'll probably be able to trace the moment we go mad.
but also, like, the best drummers in the world, at the end of a concert, they feel like they've lost several pounds in sweat, because it's a proper good workout, and I feel like we are empathising with that.
Yes.
In the way that we are perspiring. The windows are already covered in our own vital juices.
And non-vital juices.
Yep. Oh, man.
I'm going to introduce our vital guest. Our guest this week is a comedian, improviser, and, as now seems to be a trend in our guests, an academic tutor. There are either a lot of very clever people in comedy, or a lot of parents with a very low bar for their kids to clear. While at university, he began his comedy career and is now an award-winning writer and performer with 5 Edinburgh Fringe Festivals under his belt. He's also half of Shaken Not Stirred, the improvised James Bond show. He's performed across Europe and the world, written for BBC Radio 4 and The Independent, and has also worked as a creative at prestigious advertising agencies. Yeah. But most importantly for us, he is a session drummer, and his latest Edinburgh show, Snare, tells the story of how he conducted an affair with his drum teacher at music college. Presumably, she was all about that bass. He describes the show as Whiplash meets The Graduate, and who wouldn't want to see J.K. Simmons in The Graduate, right? In the Anne Bancroft role, obviously. Anyway, please welcome the man who is the natural prey of Reginald D. Hunter and Rufus Hound. It's Alexander Fox.
Can I just say, good evening, listeners. Can I just say that this has been the best 5 minutes of my life? I've said nothing. I've just sat here just listening. This has been excellent. I might go home. By the way, I have got here. To my wife and kids, I have got here.
Yeah.
Oh, is that a... I'm not sure I can get back again in the heat. But I am here, and it's nice to be here.
Did you have to come far?
I did.
Which tube line did you have to take?
Oh, I took the District, Victoria, and Northern.
Okay. Oh, those are three of the heaviest death traps.
Yeah. Yes.
This is the week in which they announced that they're going to put Wi-Fi inside the tube carriages on the tube, as opposed to just on the platforms, and everybody's just gone, please, air conditioning first!
Because the nice thing about the tube is that's the one place you didn't get any sort of aggressive racial slurs about the weather, but now they can all just break out as well.
Yeah, that sort of feels like what's going to happen to the world with global warming. Like, we're going to be on fire, but we're going to get 5G worldwide to complain about it.
Yeah, I feel like we've definitely got our priorities wrong.
We definitely have. Did you ever have a drum teacher as vicious as J.K. Simmons is in Whiplash?
I did. I had an orchestra teacher, so I did that thing where I arrived at a school and I don't, do you know when you just, it's all sort of blur when you're a kid but you don't remember how it happened, but I ended up in the room a bit like in Whiplash, where I had sheet music put in front of me to play in the orchestra in the percussion section, and I can't read music, I still can't, and it was just there, and you know, and then suddenly before you know, you're looking at it, and then all the parents are coming in and all the other and they're all going tuning up and I literally can't read music, and it's Addy Amos by Carl Jenkins, which it's not easy, it's not in English, and second it's in quite a changeable time signature as well. and I didn't know what to do. My mum and dad were there, and I was playing as well. I was playing the crash cymbals as well, so you can't miss me. Like, if it's wrong, it's really wrong. And so I went, can I go to the loo? And I just did that thing, sort of like in Peep Show where he leaves the hospital. I just walked out the building and then just walked down the hill. And just walked until I found a box hedge. It's by our little adventure playground. And I just went into the hedge. And I stood there for like an hour and a half until the concert was over, and everyone left out. I just saw my mum and dad through the fronds. I just went, I'm out again, so sorry, I got scared, and then they took me home.
Wow, that's very cute. I played cymbals in my school orchestra, because clearly I wasn't good enough at any of the other orchestral instruments. I don't know how I ended up in the orchestra, but it wasn't until like my second last year in school, they were suddenly like, oh, we need someone to do, you know, occasionally hit a snare drum or the cymbals, or triangle. Yeah, I play triangle. I'm kind of a big deal, guys.
All three sides?
I can play inside and out of the triangle.
The one thing I've learned is that no one has any idea how to play any of the instruments, I mean, at all. Because there's always that cliche that you go to a drum shop or whatever, and then the guy goes, oh, do you want to buy this? And you're like, yes. And then he goes, so you can do stuff like this? And he sort of does these incredible things. And I just can't. Of course you work in a drum shop because you're a massive nerd. I still don't understand how to play almost any of the things on my drum kit. I still don't understand really how to make the hi-hat. It just sort of falls into place.
And yet you went to music college.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but it all sort of... You were there
for the sex, not the drums.
I was there, exactly. I was there to have sex with the... Well, full sex with a woman, to quote her.
Congratulations. Yes. Inside and out.
Yes. That's right. Yes.
All three sides,
and sometimes the trills. Let's just say our windows were covered with essential juices. Yeah.
Can I just say, guys, this has been the best 5 minutes of my life.
That's what she said. Heyo!
There we are.
It's Alexander. We always ask our guests what they're worst at in the world. Clearly very good at drumming and intergenerational love affairs.
I am very good at intergenerational love affairs. I'm a decent drummer, I've always said that. I always do make the point that I'm a comedian with a drum kit, not the other way around. Because there are always, my entire career experience up to now doing this has been one, I can't gig because I have to take a drum kit around with me.
Yeah.
Or at the very least a percussion instrument and then the audience just get confused. And secondly is that at the very start of doing this, they went, whatever you got to do, get girls 18 to 25. They're the dream, they're social media savvy, they know what they're doing, blah, 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 blah. And I've singularly got every single divorced dad. With every single divorced dad who's not on Twitter, not on Facebook, who just comes for the drumming and just can't believe I've wasted his time with jokes.
But surely every divorced dad, or at least half the divorced dads, should have daughters connected to them. So even if they're not 18 to 25 yet, just bide your time.
Eventually.
Put in the work now with the dads.
Yeah, exactly.
What am I worst at then? I'm an awful singer. I'm just terrible.
Oh. Of course you are. That's why you're behind the drum.
Exactly. Yeah. But
with the notable exception of people like Levin Helm.
And also I have a great affection for the Ringo songs as well. What I mean by this is more of a philosophical point than anything else, which is I remember having arguments. My dad's a professional musician. I remember arguing as a small child, like this sort of philosophical rings that went in circles just going, Dad, I can't sing. Of course you can sing like this. And I go, but why?
Yeah.
He's like, well, that's an, EGBDF. I'm like, why? It doesn't make any. I can't hear it. You could tell it could be in Farsi. It just means nothing to me.
Did you get sort of co-opted into choirs and things at school as
yeah,
well?
Yeah, and I could do it by ear.
Yeah.
And that's always the annoying thing. So I could sing We Three Kings perfectly, but as soon as the bloke next to me started singing, I just get confused.
Yeah.
I start running in circles. Just go, we three, like that. It's just an absolute nightmare. So it's a source of constant embarrassment. Yeah, and then your agent or your producer or your friend or whoever it might be, it's like, in the middle of your show, just do that funny thing where you just do a comedy song. That always wins them over. I can't. I'd rather die. Can I just say, if you think I'm not going to steal that paradiddle joke from my show, you're so wrong. I'm happily give you a fiver for it, to be honest.
What is a paradiddle? What type of drum is a paradiddle?
Isn't it left, right, right, left?
It alternates. It goes right, left, right, right, left, right, left, left.
Oh, so it's a rhythm as opposed to a type of drum.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's a rhythm. Oh, then you have a paradiddle diddle, which is right, left, right, left, right, right, left, right, left. Right, left, left. That's what I had to say there.
One of my favourite things I ever saw growing up is my mates, Tony and Sean, who are brothers, brilliant musicians. Sean was the drummer and Tony played piano and guitar. Both brilliant. But whenever Sean would sit down at the piano, Tony would just stand behind and go, no, Sean. And he'd be like, no, I can do it. And they go, no, Sean. Left, right, right, left. No, C-A-B. No, Sean.
What a wanker. Drums have been around a really long time.
Yeah.
That was what the internet decided to tell me. The oldest drums in the world are dated from about 6000 BC, apparently. You can find drums with alligator skins made in Neolithic China. I found some of my favourite sort of old-timey drums. I found a Dong Son drum, which is it's a bronze drum made in the Red River Delta in northern Vietnam. And they're really, really cool. They're like beautiful metalwork and stuff, made from about 500, 600 BC until the 3rd century. They're like a metre high and weigh 100 kilos. Of like that much bronze you're carrying around with you. Try bring that to a gig.
Yeah, I don't think I won't.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that won't glee club.
And there's some, so they're really beautifully decorated as well. And one of the ones I really liked was the Hoang Ha drum. It was discovered in 1937, and it's got like cranes and egrets and things in it, and the inner panel has a procession on it of like men with feathers walking in a line carrying spears, and some musicians walking around behind them, and a man is depicted standing by a house beating a drum as the procession's going by, and the rice fields behind them are completely unattended. Like, everyone's left to go to this amazing drum party and there's no one is doing any work. It's all the birds are eating the rice and stuff. It's
that's what my divorced dad told me.
Once they took up the drumming, that was right. It was all downhill from there. And I really love talking drums. Have you seen them?
I mean, my son owns one and it's fucking irritating.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, talking drums. In West Africa, they have these hourglass-shaped drums and they can regulate the sound and the pitch of them by tightening and loosening the cords that connect both ends of them.
So that's what that's... As they play them, they like hit the skin and then they pull the cord and it modulates the pitch.
Or they can squeeze it with, and their arms. That squeezes the ropes and the tent produces higher and lower notes. And it can be changed during a single beat, so it produces like this warbling sound. And so it can capture the pitch and volume and rhythm of human speech. So they can send messages across, like, really
warbling speech drums.
Yeah. They would, rather than saying, like, come home, they would say, put your foot, one foot in front of the other, to make your way back to the village in which you came from. So they give, like, the most important words, like, come home, a wider context, so you really couldn't misinterpret it. Animals who drum. So this is maybe one of the reasons that their drumming is so widespread, is that in the wild, monkeys, particularly macaques, drum. They shake their branches or they thump on dead logs and things like that. Gorillas can be obviously beat on their chests and so on. This guy, Christoph Kaiser, a neuroscientist at the Max Planck Institute for Biological Cybernetics in Tübingen, Germany, sounds like the start of a horror movie, conducting experiments on monkeys. He told Live Science that monkeys respond to drumming sounds as they would to vocalisation. So drumming originated as a form of expression or communication, possibly an ancestral species common to apes and old world monkeys. And humans and macaques share an ancestor probably about 25 million years ago. Less evolutionary interesting for us, kangaroo rats drum as well.
Kangaroo, are they marsupials?
They're little rats, but they have like they're up on two legs as opposed to four.
What,
like.
And do they keep the drums inside the pouch?
They drum their feet, apparently, rather than drumming anything. And they use it to sort of, you know, scare off other kangaroo rats or warn their children about the approach of snakes and things. And apparently it doesn't deter the snakes to hear them drumming, but it does make the snake kind of go, oh, for fuck's sake, they've seen me, I'm going to have to like be even better at hunting now.
Unless it's a rattlesnake, in which case it joins in.
Yes!
Yeah, rhythm section. I mean, crucially, and I think this is the important thing for all drummers listening, is that what you told me is that they use the drums to warn their children and to frighten off predators.
But yeah.
Interesting, it's never to attract a mate, isn't it?
Yeah!
Plus ça change.
Yeah.
But there's no sort of lead guitarist wombat out there.
The wombat.
Nature has a great rhythm section, but I suppose you've got melodies and songbirds, but they're I think of them more as kind of like operatic prima donnas
rather than in a band.
Yeah, there's no sort of like guitar, bass, drums combo in nature. Not yet.
And you've got the German die on the
You've
case.
Got the lyre bird, you know.
but the lyre bird is more like a synthesizer, isn't it?
Right, it's not making the right thing.
Or a sampler.
Or playing a lyre.
Yeah.
One of those old Roman references for the show.
Its tail looks like him.
Oh, is that why it's called? I thought it was L-A-I-R.
That's L-Y-R-E.
That pun's just died a death, isn't it?
We its chest took out all of its vital organs and let it slowly fade away.
Ben van der Velde, who died today.
I would like that played over the PA system at every future gig I die at.
Yeah, whenever. Like, not even you're still on stage. It's just doesn't do quite as well you want.
Just as you leave. And you referenced this in your previous show, didn't you? The gorilla from the Cadbury's ad.
I did.
Maybe everyone's favourite drumming animal.
And let's never imagine that the show didn't start off on the basis of me putting a monkey costume on and playing the drums.
I'm sure people remember the gorilla ad. The campaign was called Gorilla, launched by Cadbury's in 2007. And it was part of a 6.2 million advertising campaign with the gorilla doing the drum fill in the middle of In the Air Tonight by Phil Collins. And Cadbury's were at a real low point at the time. They'd had to deal with a salmonella outbreak. They distributed Easter eggs that contained nuts without a nut allergy warning. And they closed a historic cemetery near Boston as a result of a treasure hunt they organised as a sales promotion. So they had a few, you know, PR faux pas. And then in 2007 it was announced it was going to be cutting about 7,500 jobs, moving a lot of them to Poland, which caused outcry in Britain from the manufacturers' trade unions. And so they're like, okay, we need to win people over. What do people like? Phil Collins and Gorillaz.
1 out of 2 right here.
They also nailed the combination of when you have no more ideas, just think about a monkey playing the cymbals. And yeah, basically did exactly that.
That is exactly it. Well, they brought on board a guy called Juan Cabral. He created the balls and paint advert campaigns for Sony Bravia for those TV which are really cool. And then an actor called Garon Michael was the central role as the gorilla, and he played great apes in films including Planet of the Apes, so you know he was the obvious go to guy.
Andy Serkis furious at being overlooked.
Well, because Andy Serkis would have had to pretend to play the drums, though they put it all in afterwards, whereas they did this
no real. Andy Serkis actually played the drums. That's the part he auditioned for.
Oh yeah.
He was going to be that impressive.
They took 3 months to produce this ad. There's like this really beautiful yak hair suit and silicon facial features which are controlled animatronically. 27 remote controlled motors in it, lots of levers. They had 2 technicians controlling it as well as the actor in the suit. And it was cooled by ice water tubing and a handheld fan pointed at his mouth between takes.
Oh, couldn't I do with one of those today?
Couldn't we just? He spent 40 hours practicing the drumming beforehand as well. Like, he really got into character. But he only had, like, a tiny little camera feed inside the head of the gorilla, so it was really hard to get it precise. So they took 35 takes to get the final 90-second bit.
Oh, come on.
Many of the takes, he broke the sticks. There was, like, shards of wood flying everywhere.
Because he was drumming with the power of a mountain gorilla.
Yeah. And it was broadcast, premiered on Friday, 31st of August, 2007, during the finale of Season 8 of Big Brother. So it was watched by about 14-15% of British TV viewers at the time. And it was so popular that Wonderbra did a parody of it. Did you ever see the Wonderbra version? A Wonderbra model called Gentina drumming along to the thing, and then the strapline, a glass and a half full of joy, the Cadbury strapline was replaced with 2 cups full of joy.
Nice.
Just strong. Cadbury's were sort of quite, didn't raise a fuss about it, but Phil Collins raised a fuss, said, no, you're infringing on my copyright in the air tonight. So he was why I got taken off the air again. When asked about the gorilla advert, Collins said, not only is he a better drummer than me, he also has more hair. It didn't just help Phil Collins' career, it did really work for Cadbury's as well. They increased sales of dairy milk 9% from the same period the year before. I also read about the little drummer boy, Bing Crosby and David Bowie. Everyone's seen the weird video for it, right?
Oh, it's more baffling on every watch.
Yeah.
And you know also that David Bowie is the angel of death.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, because Bing Crosby died 5 weeks later.
Yeah, and then there's another one that he was in as well. It was like David Bowie appeared on another American TV show. Someone like Bob Hope, but not Bob Hope.
Yeah.
And then killed them about 5 weeks later.
Wow.
With the power of his presence.
Oh, he's a Death Eater, obviously.
Yes, exactly.
I didn't realise this was part of like a big Christmas special starring Bing Crosby. So obviously we see the video of David Bowie arriving, knocking on the door, saying, "I'm the neighbour, come to play the piano." And they talk about their favourite hits. Bowie really didn't like the song Little Drummer Boy. He said when they asked him to do the special, would he do it? He said, "I fucking hate that song. Is there anything else I could sing?" And so they wrote the Peace on Earth counter melody for him to sing. Yeah.
It's so weird with someone like Bowie, because, well, just doing on the one side, when like Bowie and Dylan having got older, you then go like, oh, of course, you grew up in the 40s, 50s and 60s, you hear the music that Dylan's making now and it's all like old rockabilly and jazz standards.
Yeah.
And like Bowie's gone, he went even more experimental, but he had such an affection for music that his fans in the 70s would think was completely out of date.
Yeah.
But he's so musically talented, he can make it almost sound good.
Yeah. And before I get to my choice, obviously I have to mention Animal from The Muppets.
Mm-hmm.
The drummer from Dr. Teeth and The Electric Mayhem, of course, first appeared in the 1975 Muppet Show pilot, The Muppet Show, Sex and Violence.
Great title.
It's great. He's chained up in a basement cell when not performing on stage in it. Very, very popular with young people because of his unrestrained impulses. Frank Oz says he got the character down to 5 words: sex, sleep, food, drums, and pain.
Those are the 5 essential urges in life.
I think so.
That's
absolutely.
My Edinburgh flyer.
Yeah. apparently, do you know the name of Animal's mother?
It's
a good one, this.
Oh, that's a great trivia.
Yeah, he doesn't really
trivia.
Have parents here, but then there's a book, The Case of the Missing Mother, which reveals Animal has a mother.
Gaia.
The Earth Mother herself. No, it's Laverne. Yeah, his mother's also a drummer as well. People always say that Animal's inspired by Keith Moon, or sometimes maybe Mick Fleetwood. It doesn't seem to actually be based on anything. Three of the members of the Electric Mayhem were created by Michael K. Frith, who was a Muppet designer, and he was basing them on people. Dr. Teeth is Dr. John and Elton John.
No, he's not Elton John, he's Dr.
He's a mix of both.
Is he?
Yeah, apparently so.
Oh.
Yeah. Floyd Pepper is based on Sergeant Pepper and all of that. And Janis apparently is a long-haired Mick Jagger. Everyone thinks of Janis Joplin, but she's actually a Mick Jagger type character. But Animal was designed by Jim Henson separately to that, and you can see some of the rough sketches, and it doesn't seem to be based on anyone in particular.
The behaviour is an amalgam of various drummers.
Yeah, I mean, Buddy Rich on The Muppet Show said all drummers are animals, so it kind of makes sense that he ends up like that. The actual drumming, Animal's actual drumming, was performed by Ronnie Burrell, who was in Jack Parnell's house band that performed on The Muppet Show. Animal was the mascot of the US snowboarding team in 1998 at the Winter Olympics.
Of course
in Nagano.
He was.
Yeah, yeah. Apparently he made a TV appearance in Nagano with a reporter from CBS and she stapled his feet to a snowboard. And I think my favourite Animal gag is when they go the other end of the scale where they don't make him out to be a maniac and they just suddenly make him seem weirdly intellectual. So in The Great Muppet Caper, Kermit says, what's wrong with the drummer? He looks a little crazed. And Zoot says, he's just upset about missing the Rembrandt exhibit. The Animal goes, Renoir! but my choice for the world's worst drummer is Mary Berry. That Mary Berry, as on Great British Bake Off Mary Berry. In July 2018, at the age of 83... Mary Berry was at Camp Bestival, the music festival here in the UK, to film part of her new TV show, Quick Cooking. And the reason she went down there was because she wanted to sample some festival food, but also she was filming a bit with Rick Astley.
Oh, yes, I remember that, yeah.
And Rick, she says, is one of my daughter-in-law's favourites. As well as filming a bit with Rick Astley where she says, I'd like you to try my muffins. Mary, you're such a flirt. She also ended up on stage drumming with Rick Astley during his performance of his song Beautiful Life.
No, Rick Astley only has one song.
Yeah, I know. And it's not that one, exactly.
And she can do it. She's a drummer.
I mean, she can hit drums really fast. She's got good arms, presumably from all the whiskey.
Whiskey, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. She's got a really mean left hook. She seems to have a very sort of loose drum solo going on in the video clips I've seen of it. It's really fucking weird, man. She's just beating these drums and then she does the like the drumsticks crossed in front of her thing. Simple, because obviously someone said, oh, that's what drummers do when they've like finished drumming. That they put their drumsticks up in an X. She does it once and then Rick Astley like is singing it and then he goes over and gets her to like do some more drumming, so she does it again as like the button on it.
That's bizarre. And then at the end the explosives that are rigged in the bass drum go up.
Yeah.
And then Baked Alaska just arises out of the ashes.
Yeah.
Do you remember Gavin and Stacey when they made Dawn from Next Door? Yes. Dora Doris play the drums in the church, and apparently that's exactly the same thing where they just thought it was hilarious to something inside so strong she played the drums on it, and apparently you just out of shot in during the shooting there is, because it's hilarious, it almost brilliantly comic out of time. Apparently she is trying to do it in time.
Yeah.
There's an assistant director going now and she does what, oh I see, like that. So every single time she's missing it.
I urge everyone to go look at the clip. The organizer of Camp Festival, Rob DeBank, described it as one of the festival's odder moments.
Rather than any hard research, the real drummer in me wants to turn this into a free-for-all jazz improvised session. All killer, no filler. Let's think about... I want to link it to Animal. I want to talk first about Buddy Rich. I think that's the best place that I can start.
Oh, yeah.
Because he... both shows... this will be my second show that I've done using drums, and he's been the inspiration for both in different ways.
So who is Buddy Rich?
Buddy Rich is... For the casual observer, Buddy Rich is widely regarded, or at least he's one of those people where enough people say it to make it true, where he is the most famous drummer ever, or the best drummer ever, when you look at it. And basically the reason for that is he was a child prodigy, so he was, but in the days where you could be like a real child, you know, there was no mucking about, so
there were only four channels.
But this, in 1920s and 30s America or whatever, he was the second highest paid kid in America. Not behind Shirley Temple. I have looked this one up for you, lads.
Oh, is this a gender pay gap thing?
Coogan. Someone Coogan. Someone Coogan? Jackie Coogan in the 1930s.
Who was Jackie Coogan?
I'll tell you who Jackie Coogan was. I'll tell you right now who Jackie Coogan was. He was an actor and comedian who began as a child in short films, and he died in 1984, so he was quite old. But I mean, but literally, by two, he was on stage in their act.
Wow.
Old school, this. And by four, he had his own bit on Broadway.
Drumming.
Baby Trapped the Drum Wonder, age four, who could play Stars and Stripes Forever on a drum. Which does make you think, I mean, it's of all the things to pick.
Yeah.
Stars and Stripes on the drums is just really boring.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah, but playing to a raucous home crowd, they're going to love that.
They're going to love that.
You know, in the build-up to World War II.
Yes. You also got me thinking, I'm sorry to go back a bit, but I can't help but think now, I've never thought about the Muppets having a nationality until you said that they are American, which makes it slightly more menacing to me.
But funny enough, there is a French Muppet program, I think it might be called Muppet Television or something, but Animal speaks in full sentences on the French version, which is quite upsetting, because... You just wanted to go, woman!
Yeah.
Instead, he's going, well, you know, so many options, really.
Yeah, he's quoting from Rambo. The French poet, not the film.
But anyway, so Buddy Rich, by the time he's four, he is this drum wonder. And then basically, he also, a bit of fact for your Jewish-based drumming knowledge, is that he also taught Mel Brooks to drum.
Great. Cool.
So that's two. Also goes against the idea that all good Jewish boys have to be doctors or lawyers, because I reckon a show drummer who's a real prick to everyone is somewhere really in the middle of what a Jewish mother would want and what she wouldn't want.
I would feel like that's good. That like it pays into the comedy thing, all the rhythm stuff.
Yeah.
So
well, yeah, I'm fascinated by this. There is a massive history of comedians being drummers from like now. You've got Al Murray's the first famous one.
Yeah.
Acaster was apparently very good.
That is not surprising. Oh, he's got the right physicality for drumming as well.
He's quite long.
Yeah.
Leany.
Although Buddy Rich is like a tiny little guy. Yeah, because that's the other thing with drummers. It is any half decent rock or jazz musician is probably going to be quite physically imposing, but drummers really are just lean and fit, and have got a handshake that will crush your hand. But Buddy Rich looks like a good bantamweight boxer.
If you never see me, the listener, do imagine me like these people they're describing. And very physically fit, I don't care what anyone says.
Yeah. To be fair, Alex, I'd say you've got the physicality of a solid opening bowler for a minor counties cricket team.
Where do you think I'm going after this? Peter Sellers as well, a very famous drummer.
Oh, really?
And I think, without being too pretentious, I do think part of it is because if you really enjoy comedy writing, it is about rhythms.
Mm.
And it's very hard to explain to non-comedy people as well, or just non-performance people, why rhythm is so important, but like why a line can just dramatically change.
Yeah.
And it, for some reason, it's exactly the same tone and phrase, but for some reason, one syllable rather than two is more important. So it is that adage, I guess, with drummers of less is more, or in Buddy Rich's case, more is more.
Yeah.
Because his big thing, and basically the reason, going back to him, is that basically he becomes the most famous drummer in America, basically. He's Frank Sinatra's both best friend and, like, nemesis.
I feel like that was Frank's relationship with most people.
Yeah. And so, you know, it's always, you know, Frank's threatening to get the mafia on him, and Buddy is like a black belt in judo.
So
they have these incredible fights. And apparently they, like, share women, but then also, like, kill each other, like, break each other's faces. So they have this weird relationship. But so basically then
just fuck already, guys.
Yeah, exactly. Frank Sinatra, he then goes off and becomes sort of, I don't want to say parody of himself, a paradiddle of himself. But he basically just goes on American talk shows and plays the drums, and comes on Parkinson and plays the drums. And I guess he's the worst bloke in the world rather than the worst drummer, because he is undeniably a brilliant performer. And I think Ringo Starr said he can do things with one hand that I can't do with nine. I've always liked having Ringo. He really
does. Which goes to show Ringo's head for numbers. Yeah. It's two, Ringo. One, yes. Two.
And
one,
how often
two.
Do you do that? I do that 8 days a week. Thanks, Ringo.
Jesus.
It's just nice to be involved.
Yeah. Because didn't he also have a massive rivalry where there was Max Roach and Gene Krupa?
Gene Krupa, yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
And then they started doing it, and then they basically created the drum battles. He had Roach versus Rich and all these kind of things,
and they parodied that when Rich was on the Muppet Show. He and Animal do a drum battle against each other.
Exactly. There's a good piece in the Guardian about this the other day, but we have a real affection with people who are vile. So they were doing about Oliver Reed and Richard Harris and Peter O'Toole, how now they'd be cancelled immediately.
Yeah.
Cancelled. But that we hold an affection to them because their hilarious womanising and drinking and whatever was done with a sort of wry English grin, and they were saying how in America it's more about drugs and it doesn't really translate. But Buddy Rich's thing is that no one liked him because he was just vile. And so that's why things like Whiplash are so resonant, is because he's just horrible to everyone. And literally every drummer you say goes, he's my biggest hero, oh, you ever meet him? Yeah, he like broke my jaw. Or like, yeah, he was just vile. So like, one of my favorite drummers, Billy Cobham from Weather Report. He met Buddy Rich in a club and says, "You're my biggest." And he was like, he's not like any small time. He's like an incredibly famous drummer. And he said, "Can you sign my snare drum?" And he just threw it down the stairs.
People in the club applauded. And they're like, "Oh wow, that was very inventive."
Yeah, and also it fell down the stairs very rhythmically. It's so weird being that much of a jackass when it's like you're at the top of your game. And well, and also as a drummer, you surely get out all that pent up anger.
Where's it coming from? Exactly. I don't know. But like the same thing happens with Buddy Rich, where like he goes on American chat shows and there's like the good old boys like Letterman and that sort of stuff. And they're like, "What do you think about Dusty Springfield?" He's like, "Well, she's a hell of a guy." And everyone's like, "Ha ha, it's funny because she said he's a bloke." But he's not a bloke. And it's just like, come on, mate. Let's just not slag everyone off all the time.
It's really upsetting when arseholes are nevertheless unquestionably talented.
Yeah.
The ones I always find hardest are actors or comedians, because I'm like, to be a good actual comedian, surely you have to have a base level of empathy that will, prevent you being a bell end. I spoke rather rhythmically strangely there, somewhat emphasising your point from earlier on.
A ride bell end.
Yes. That was such a brilliantly niche joke, and I know that about 5% of our listeners will have enjoyed it.
You're welcome, lads.
Yeah.
And then we'll be lads.
Welcome, lads. I'll see you on the roof of Parliament.
Yeah. Back to the Batman costume.
So yes, the reason, back to Buddy Rich, the reason he's most famous now, or one of the reasons, is that have you ever heard of the Buddy Rich tapes? A musician, I don't know, someone in the brass section, had the idea of taking a tape recorder onto the team bus after gigs. And this is where the Whiplash stuff comes from, basically, which is he got on and secretly pirate recorded these, and obviously in the day when bootlegs existed, you could get hold of Buddy Rich losing it at the band. So door shuts, goodbye, thank you so much, goodbye New York. And then, I mean, absolutely, you've never heard anything like it. I've got a few choice quotes up in front of you, but like, you know, they're described as the most concussively powerful white hot rage that's ever happened live.
That's a hell of a sentence.
That's outside of his performances.
Yeah, I mean, James Brown was notoriously like very authoritarian and dictatorial band leader, and he could hear if you were one beat off, and that'd be it, you'd be sacked. Yeah. But his band were drum tight.
Yeah. With he gets on and we're doing, you know, he does, "What kind of playing do you think this is? What a fucking band do you motherfuckers think you are? You want to fuck with me on the bandstand? I'm working my balls off and you motherfuckers are sucking all over this joint. You call that a trumpet section? You saxophones? You gotta be fucking kidding me." And it goes on for a good 10 minutes of him shouting, "I'm accustomed to working with number one musicians, not half-assed kids who think they wrote the fucking business. You got a fucking long way to go, you fucking children. None of you are men. Not one man among you. Ooh. One man can go out of there and play a job like a fucking man." So all this kind of stuff. It's well worth listening to it. They're so famous that there are three moments in Seinfeld where Jerry and Larry David wrote in Buddy Rich lines into the show just to see if anyone would notice. Where I think Mr. Costanza in an episode goes, "This guy, he's not my kind of guy," which is a Buddy Rich quote about one of his musicians. Where he's just, and they are incredible to listen to. There is one clip as well on YouTube of him. You know, there's that weird thing we have in this country where these big bands play casino. Sort of like casinos, whatever. And these
Vegas residences.
Yeah, it's exactly Vegas residences. Thank you. And exactly. And there is a clip of him, like, you know, 200 strong band, and he's going 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4. He starts off doing, and he just goes, no, stop. And like, it's like that 10,000 people in the audience. He just goes, "No, if you're not going to play properly, we're not going to play at all. Right, now we're going to do it. Okay, let's try again." And it's like, "Oh, Christ." You know, and I've got that poor bloke he's looking at. I'm like, "Oh, God." Because how can he hear it? He's playing 10 million drums. He never mics up because he's too good.
It's mad, but the ability to hear that. And well, hey, sometimes there's an ability to hear that and sometimes it is just emotional abuse.
Yeah, exactly. I want to build on what you said as well earlier about, and it's just a throwaway one, this, but I want to build on earlier what you said about all those amazing primal sounds of drumming. And what I like in terms of another worst drummer ever is when Ginger Baker was in Cream, and everyone loved Cream, and he's brilliant. And actually, at the start of my show, the opening music is just a Ginger Baker drum solo, which people seem to enjoy, and I just found it. But what I like is that at the height of their fame, when they broke up, Ginger Baker went, "I'm a pretty average jazz drummer from I don't know, Stepney or somewhere. I'm gonna go to Africa." And I'm, to quote Peter Cook, "I'm going to go and teach the natives how to drum." Incredible, brilliant, like, satire of Ginger Baker.
Is that when he went away to play with Fela Kuti?
Yeah, all that. And so he ends up down there, And he sort of tours around, I think he's in Nigeria, but then I think he tours around to Cameroon and Ghana and the Ivory Coast. But I just love the idea that he just run over and go, yeah, I'll teach him a thing or two. So, and again, I would say, well, he did a good thing because he made a recording studio in which they record lots of African music. So it's a good thing. But again, he's so famously vile.
Yes.
He just go around punching people in the face and like, sort of weirdly like holding women like hostage in his house and all this weird sort of really weird stuff.
I'm not sure I like the idea of using music as a colonial force.
Hey, as I say, especially when these really sophisticated drums have come our way, we've sort of bastardised them into some sort of weird like orchestral Western thing. I mean, and then it goes back sort of to re-teach them how to do it. I've always found that weird thing about national anthems. I've always found this absolutely fascinating that all national anthems are, you know, if you go to listen to, I don't know them exactly, but I'm sure the Democratic Republic of Congo or South Korea or whatever, we put them all with a string section and a horn section into a tune that's basically Elgar, which it's not even in their musical lexicon, those chord progressions, and so we just make them do that one.
Yeah, isn't it nice when you hear a national anthem that's not in 4/4 time as well? It's what a treat!
So yeah, I am slightly fascinated by the fact that most of the great drummers that come down to us are white, but they all venerate black drummers.
Mm.
Buddy Rich, to be fair to him, always said how pretty the black drummers were and how he didn't really match up to them, and then he's went away and swiftly just stole their entire shtick.
Well, that's... it's interesting that that happened in jazz, because obviously in jazz, much more than rock and roll, the black performers were celebrated. Mm. I mean, there was still a lot of segregation, but the great musicians in jazz are Oscar Peterson, they are Miles Davis, they are Charlie Parker, they are Art Blakey. Although, obviously, everyone knows Buddy Rich and not nearly enough people know Art Blakey. Whereas in rock and roll, things were much more whitewashed.
In terms of the worst drummer ever, I think I'd like to put myself in there for one anecdote. because this is the height of arrogance and madness, which is in Edinburgh, in my first year, you do that stuff where you're doing, you know, you're under pressure every day and you're worried and you're doing all the producing yourself and you're worried that you're hemorrhaging money and all this. And there was a bit in my show. It's still my worst nightmare. Everyone has like a university finals nightmare or whatever. This is my nightmare.
Is this your first solo show?
This is my first Ringo. So I did this show, and in it, it all leads up to this big drum solo where I do a drum solo battling the invisible Liverpudlian drummer who lives in my head. I mean, the highlight of the show for me is just...
But he's not even the best drummer
He's not even the best drummer in my head. and there's this whole big thing. I mean, to be honest, the show is basically a vessel for me to go around but basically playing Ringo style like a slightly dementia-driven old man. Just sort of go around, hello everyone, peace and love, great to be here. Not entirely sure where he is at any point. But there was a sound cue. I mean, if you're listening... Boy in the audience, you know who you are. There was a sound cue where did the solo battle and did the Mary Berry Cross thing, whatever.
And then as is now known.
The Mary Berry Cross, a hot cross bun, and threw the sticks into the wings, which prompted an immediate sound cue of a boy going ow, and it was a callback to early in the show where I mentioned my old drumming partner got hit in the eye by an errant drumstick, and it's like haha, it's a callback.
Yeah.
And one day I was doing the solo and like, everything had gone wrong in the show. Like the laughs were in the wrong places. Like at one point Colin Holt, the quite famous comedian, accidentally walked into my show because his little girl, his little daughter, had stumbled in through the door and he was trying to chase her. Like everything went wrong, could go wrong. The sound system packed it in, so the drums was intermittent or whatever. And it was all just building up, and I thought, you know what was gonna win them back? Some kind of mad last thing where I'm like Keith Moon with this bam bam bam, it went off for way longer than normal, bam 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 bam, smash. And I thought, you know what rock stars do? So bad to tell it.
Oh no.
I threw the sticks over the heads of the audience.
Oh no.
Like a rock star, but I'm in a giant inflatable igloo anyway, so they just bounce off the walls, no worries. And I threw it. I'm a really good thrower, as you mentioned earlier. I'm not bad at it as a fast bowler. And I threw the stick, I mean, so dead straight ahead of me and down off the stage, I can't even tell you. And I hit a teenage boy on the cheek, like frighteningly close to his eye.
And I
play it through every single day of my life. If I'd blinded a kid, I'd never work. I don't know what I'd do, but I'd never work in comedy again, first of all. And literally, the whole room goes quiet. Like, the old ladies faint. And they all knew it was an accident, so they were sort of like, woo, come on, sort of get back on your horse. And I was like, oh, that's very sweet. But then I was just doing my lines, being like, last time I'm going to say that line because I'm going to be fired in a minute or whatever. Or like, you know, like, thanks very much. As you leave, don't forget to tell the security to come in, and I will obviously go off to the police station, wherever it might be. Anyway, got outside. The family absolutely pissed themselves laughing. They thought it was the funniest thing in the world. They're like, oh, it's obviously an accident. He's fine. He's got loads of scars. He's like, haha, got a story now. I'm like, yeah, I bet you do. like the rest of the people from Pleasance came in, I just burst into tears, being like, please don't sack me. And they just found it the funniest thing in the world. They were like, we'll make you sign a form. We're like, don't do it again or we'll fire you.
I have to tell you that the ghost of Buddy Rich is disgusted with your behaviour.
Yeah.
Are you a man? You're not a real man. a real drumming man.
So what I can assure people is I will never, ever, ever, ever throw a drumstick again.
Are you going to pick renowned jazz drumming child genius Buddy Rich?
Yep.
Or renowned rock / Afrobeat drummer Ginger Baker, or talented multi-instrumentalist and comedian Alexander Fox?
I'm going to choose Buddy Rich because I think, unless you listen, when you listen to those tapes, I think you'll agree with me that it's probably the worst abuse you've ever heard someone give someone else.
Mm.
From a privileged position.
I don't know. If you've not met some of Ben's reviewers.
So, to begin with, we are going to go to 15th century Czechoslovakia. And we're going to talk...
Classic Vandervelde.
And we're going to talk about a gentleman called Jan Žižka, who was a Czech general and a leader of the Hussites. The Hussites were people who gathered behind a gentleman called Jan Hus, who was sort of like part of an early proto-Reformation rebellion against the Catholic Church. And he was an incredible general, and his troops followed him anywhere and everywhere. He overcame armies that were much bigger than his, that were part of the Holy Roman Empire and the Hungarian Empire, and he was able to quickly train peasants to repeatedly face highly trained and armoured opponents. When he died, his chronicler said that he was so well regarded, his soldiers called themselves the Orphans because they felt like they'd lost a father. His enemy said that he was the one whom no mortal hand could destroy was extinguished by the finger of God. And you'd imagine that a gentleman like that, when he's died, would want a square named after him, perhaps a statue, maybe a small church built on land.
Free ticket to my show.
Or even a free ticket to Alexander Fox's show.
He sounds like a divorced dad.
But no, when he died of the plague on October the 11th, 1424, his dying wish was to have his skin used to make drums so that he might continue to lead his troops even after death. So
that's grim.
Yeah, super grim. I mean, he didn't say which bit of his skin. He wouldn't want to look down and be drumming and just have his face looking up at you.
That's quite Norman Bates, that, isn't it?
It is a little bit Norman Bates, yeah.
We're carrying Daddy around. Let's beat Daddy with the sticks.
Yeah, so real sort of BDSM drums there.
Yeah.
I also found out a brilliant bit of trivia. I think I've heard this told elsewhere, but it's a story worth telling, about a song that has the most played and sampled 7 seconds of music in history. Do you know what it is?
It's about one of those old-fashioned English... Oh, go on, Ben.
I feel like this is the scene from Father Ted where Mrs. Doyle is trying to guess that priest's name.
Guess that priest.
Yeah.
So there is a track released by a soul group called The Winstons that was released in May 1969 called Colour Him Father, and it sold millions of copies. On the B side of that, they did a cover of a track called Amen Brother, and that is an instrumental cover of a song by Jester Hairston, which is a great name.
Very good name.
And there was a drum solo in it, a minute and a half in, by a gentleman called Gregory Sylvester Coleman. And that is the drum beat that became known as the Amen Break. And the Amen Break was sampled throughout 1980s hip-hop, in particular, and is still sampled to this day. It is used on Salt and Pepper's debut album. It is used throughout a lot of N.W.A.'s work, particularly on Straight Outta Compton. It's used loads in Jungle. It's even appeared on David Bowie's drum and bass song, Little Wonder. Not a good idea, DP. And Oasis's opening to Be Here Now, Do You Know What I Mean? And at current estimates, over 2,000 released tracks make use of it.
Wow.
And it's because it's just perfect to cut up and mess around with and speed up and slow down. I will drop it in now.
Oh, cool, that one.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
that one,
that one.
Hopefully, all our listeners are going, all right, I get it.
Yeah,
so that was a lovely little thing that I found out. I went back to nature. Something that you did miss out when you spoke about nature's drummers was woodpeckers.
Yeah.
Because obviously woodpeckers, there's two different reasons that they drum. One is to find the mites and the grubs and the worms inside the trees. Mm. But the other is territorial drumming, very close to Nirvana's territorial pissing. what scientists did, researchers did, is they thought that perhaps that woodpeckers picked their mates depending on who was better or worse at drumming.
If only, eh, Alexander?
Right.
So what they did is they took recording equipment into the woodpecker territories and recorded intruders' drumming songs, and they manipulated them to be either shorter or longer. And then they returned to territories with, like, couples, because they're very monogamous woodpeckers, where couples had sort of reigned over that area. They played back the songs and watched to see what would happen. Longer songs got the birds revved up and ready to fight. But if it was a shorter song, they were like, it's a session drummer, nothing to worry about. So I was very tempted to have my suggestion of the world's worst drummer just be a shit woodpecker.
Don't they have some sort of like special cushioning around their brains so they protect them when they're doing it?
Yeah, I don't know if it's kind of like liquid.
Yeah. Or...
otherwise they get like shell shock or something.
Yeah. Oh, the most tragic thing. Woodpecker told to give up drumming.
Yeah.
Tries to write in war poetry.
Yeah. I forgot. I do have to tell you a couple of drummer jokes.
Oh, yeah.
How can you tell if the stage is level? Because the drummer drools out of both sides of his mouth. What's the difference between a drummer and a pig?
Go on.
A pig won't stay up till 5 a.m. to try and fuck another pig.
I don't mean, there's a really old one. Like, what's the drummer's phone number? 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
That's lovely. Great. So I looked at drummer boys, who we've alluded to. Percussion and wind instruments have been used on the battlefield since ancient times. The carnyx, which is a wind instrument used by the Iron Age Celts.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a bloody scary-looking one. It's sort of like... it's a wind instrument, but on the end of it, it's got, like, a dragon's face.
Oh, yeah, I've seen them. They're really cool.
Yeah, but they were used sort of like ancient bugles to sort of direct the troops, but the drums were used both to make people march in time and different drum beats to indicate different... tactics on the battlefield.
Because of the roar of the, you know, fighting and everything, it's quite hard to get a message across.
Yeah, exactly. The prototype for the modern military band actually came from the Ottoman military, and they had the largest group. In fact, in sort of 17th century Ottoman Empire, there were 40 guilds of musicians, and a lot of them were focused on being regimental military musicians.
Nice.
And I love, like, the idea of a regimental drummer makes sense, but I love that they had whole, like, bands. Mm. So you could have the regimental oboe and the regimental bassoon. But drummer boys was a way of young men, almost always young men, unless they were, you know, girls in disguise, trying to catch the fray. Pleasingly, a lot of them died. In 1793, a 14-year-old French Republican drummer called Joseph Barra was killed in the war in the Vendée, and he was killed right at the moment he shouted "Long live the Republic," which I find hilarious. And his body was interred at the Pantheon alongside other national heroes.
Oh, cool. Obviously, if you kill the drummers, you can cut off the lines of communication.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Oh, so it's essentially like cutting the phone lines,
yeah,
isn't
it?
Yeah. Yeah, in the...
although, you know, killing the drummer seems creepy. I mean, just poke a hole in his... You've got bayonets, poke a hole in the drummer seems... You know, it's a proportionate response.
At the siege of Sevastopol during the Crimean War, there was an unnamed drummer boy in the 77th Regiment. He saw that a Russian boy trumpeter was trying to escape. He caught hold of him and he beat him with his fists, according to the newspaper report, in truly British fashion, and I hope in 3-4 times as well, until he surrendered. He presented the Russian trumpet later on to General Lord Raglan, the British commander. The youngest drummer boy in history was an 8-year-old called Johnny Clem. And Johnny Clem ran away to take part in the American Civil War. I'm delighted to say he was on the side of the Yankees, so all okay.
He's sort of a 19th century sort of one of those people who runs away to join ISIS.
Right? Yeah. He's radicalised by his orchestra.
He'd be if you've got Jihadi John and Jihadi Ringo, then presumably he's Jihadi, like, I don't know, Elgar or something.
Yeah. No, Jihadi John, Jihadi Ringo, Jihadi Paul, and Jihadi George. We can fight later for who gets that one. But he wasn't armed, but until he was 12 years old, and then they gave him like a little tiny preteen musket, which obviously was usual at the time, but now is standard issue in America.
Yeah.
But there were so many drummer boys in the Civil War, it got nicknamed the Boys' War.
Oh.
Which I never knew before. But my suggestion for the world's worst drummer is the drummer of Tedworth. And the drummer of Tedworth was noted by an Englishman called Joseph Glanvil in his book Seducimus Triumphatus. And it was... which sounds like a bad translation of the Kama Sutra, doesn't it?
Seducimus. What a rapper name.
Seducius Triumphant sounds like the rejected name for your next Edinburgh show, isn't it? Yes. Snare seems much more relatable.
He was in the Wu-Tang Clan.
We've all been in the Wu-Tang Clan.
Yeah. You know, it's actually my shift in a couple of hours.
I just got back from doing Blazing Squats.
Yeah. Is this what we're doing instead of National Service? Yeah. This was written in the mid-1660s, and it was reported that local landowner John Mompesson, who owned a house in Tedworth in Wiltshire, had brought a lawsuit against an unlicensed vagrant drummer called William Drury, who basically went around his estate drumming, and he accused him of collecting money by false pretenses. Basically, he didn't like him busking. After he'd won the judgment against the drummer, the drum was turned over to Mompesson by the local bailiff. Mompesson then found that his house was plagued by nocturnal drumming noises.
Ooh.
And it was alleged that the drummer had brought these plagues of noise upon Mompesson by witchcraft because he had associated with a band of gypsies.
Is this an Enid Blyton book?
Glanvil, the author of the Seducimus, visited the house in 1663 and claimed to have heard strange scratching noises under a bed in the children's room. 4 years later, Samuel Pepys, in his diary, records his wife reading the story to him, and he found it to be a strange story of spirits that were worth reading indeed. However, about 200 years later, in a book called The Extraordinary Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds by Charles Mackay...
I can see where this is going.
Yeah. He drilled a little bit further down to it and found that it was absolutely a fraudulent case of poltergeistism.
You astound me.
Yeah. And what actually happened is that Mompesson created it using his children. not using them as the skins on the drums.
Yeah, yeah.
But basically... Sneaking under floorboards and hiding under beds and basically putting the wind up guests.
Amazing.
Yeah, so I don't really know why he decided to do this. He wasn't monetizing it, but I guess it was to try and really sully the already sullied name of this tramp drummer.
So the fact was he hated the sound of your man banging on his drum and walking around his estate. So what he decided to do was bring the drum into his house and then get his children to drum.
Correct.
Inside.
Yes.
And that was his solution.
Yes.
Fucking people in the 17th century were mad, weren't they?
Yes, they were.
And that drummer grew up to become Mahatma Gandhi.
Our suggestions for the world's worst drummer are known cake botherer and Rick Astley groupie, Mary Berry, one of the greatest drummers of all time, but one of the worst men of all time, Buddy Rich, or a collection of children of gentry pretending to be a poltergeist in the 17th century. An excellently mixed bag as ever, ladies and
really
gentlemen. Listen... when you said Buddy Rich, my heart both sang and sank because Machine is one of my favourite songs of all time.
Okay.
It is a 4-minute drumming masterclass where his entire big band sounds like a car chase. It's incredible. And as much of an ass hi-hat, if you will, that Buddy Rich is, I cannot call him the worst drummer of all time and then go home and look my dad in the eye.
I take this gracefully.
Thank you.
And... like a man, as Buddy Rich would say.
Yeah. Which means it's between Mary Berry and a collection of 17th century children pretending to be a ghost.
Or as Mary Berry called them, her childhood friends. Yeah.
I mean, the thing is, there's something heroic about Mary Berry on the drums.
Yeah, there is. I mean, it's hilarious. The reaction of the crowd when the lights come up or it appears on the screen is kind of a mixture of bafflement and delight.
And was she good enough to support Rick Astley?
No, she wasn't she wasn't recognisably drumming any sort of, you know, rhythm, but she was able to hit a lot of drums
at quite a high speed with some variety.
I always feel sorry for like the actual drummer who's contracted to play.
The
real thrill is playing on these famous tracks. It's like, oh, all right, I'll sit out for a chef. Not a chef, a cake cook.
A cake cook, a baker.
That's the one. A baker.
A cake cook.
A ginger baker.
Oh, so I'm torn between this blonde-haired baker or my children acting out a very odd prank.
Who would your little boy choose? Because he has a talking drum.
Yeah.
Maybe he is the way through.
Maybe
this.
He can be the arbiter of this difficult decision.
Channel your child's way of thinking.
I'm going to channel...
Please stop shitting yourself.
I'm going to channel his thinking. I mean, I think he would find more in common with the child drummers of Tedworth. So it looks like we're going for them, isn't it?
Yeah, well done, the children.
Very, very fair.
Wow, okay. Before we go to the world's worst news of the week, and it is that Boris Johnson is the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom.
Yeah. No jokes there, kids. No. That's a real sentence. You can say that's a factual, correct thing.
I heard he's only 5'9", is that true? So I think it's been widely mistold that he's massive. Apparently he's 5'9". Yeah, I met Prince Charles once, and I'm talking like 5'5". Maybe not 5'5", but I mean, he's uncomfortably under 5'9".
Wow.
And you always think, they must just shoot him like that.
The classic Mussolini shot.
Yes, yes.
From kneeling position.
I will tell you a genuinely piece of worse news, which we go to Sydney. It's another drug-based news, where a clumsy driver led police to a $140 million drug bust in Australia after he crashed a van laden with 600 pounds of methamphetamines into an empty patrol car parked outside a police station.
Oh, wow. That's the easiest police chase ever.
Yeah.
Those poor musicians composing the music for that chase. Like, oh, no, we just need John Cage.
So, my deepest sympathies to that drug dealer and to the Australian police. If you could send the methamphetamine over to the UK, pronto, because my God, we need it.
Yeah.
Before we go,
we'll do a trade deal for it as well.
Alexander, before we go, where can people find you and what can they find you doing when they get there?
All right then, everyone, you can follow me on social media, on Twitter at Alexander Fox, etc., and on Facebook at Alexander Fox Comedy. In Edinburgh, I'll be doing two shows. I'd love to see you at one, if not both of them. The first one is my solo show, Snare, which Barry very kindly plugged at the start. That is Alexander Fox Snare. That's at 6 p.m. every single day at the Fringe. No day off, like a legend. That's at 6 p.m. at the Pleasance Courtyard. I also do an improvised James Bond film called Shaken Not Stirred, which is almost every single day at the Fringe. That's midday, that's free, and that's at Just the Tonic. But if you had to come to one based on this, please do come to Snare. Please! It's been absolutely charming to be here. Thanks very much, guys.
Our absolute pleasure. We're all off to hide under the beds at 10 Downing Street, whispering, "Are you a real man?" Yeah, until next time, goodbye.
Bye.
Worst Foot Forward is part of Podnose, the UK's leading independent entertainment podcasting network. For episode archives of Worst Foot Forward and all of the shows on the network, visit us at www.podnose.com. You can also follow us on Twitter via @podnose or send us an email via admin@podnose.com.